Just shut up.
Don't they know there's history to talk about?
Don't they know that we are trying to record our podcast?
Don't they know we're trying to tell the good word podcast?
Of the Lord.
I mean, right now it is because it's your day.
That's true. It's my day.
It's your day.
You didn't know my last name is Lord.
It's on all the business cards and all the things.
Everything we post.
But we don't say it a lot, though.
No. But, you know. I make a lot of jokes because I'm also, you know, Christian. Uh-huh. So I make a lot of Lord jokes. And like that one.
What's it? You're telling me someone misspelled it L-U-R-D?
Dude. Okay. So my uncle passed away like a couple years ago. And so, but I was like in charge of his estate. And so I still get his mail. Mm-hmm. And so I've been trying to go through when I get the mail and call those people and be like, hey, my uncle died. Stop sending me mail, which is just like a weird exercise, one, because, you know, it's a weird conversation to have. Mm-hmm. And then I'll do it like all in one day. So I'll have that same conversation like eight times. And I'll feel like I'm just like in Groundhog's Day where I just say the same thing over and over again.
Right.
Which slightly worries me that I'm going to like say that to other people. Be like, hi, my uncle died. Stop sending us mail. But... yeah, one of them, my last name is Lord, L-O-R-D, right? And my parents, when I was younger, I always remember them spelling it every time they'd say it, and I always thought it was weird.
Yeah.
Because it's just a noun.
It's such a like normal a word.
Like a normal noun.
Yeah.
And so, but now I spell it every time, almost always too, because people don't hear you right or something.
And I thought it was going to be stuff like L-O-R-D-E.
And they do that a lot.
Which
thanks, Lord.
Which,
stupid.
I mean, that one's almost acceptable in a way because it's silent. You're just putting too much effort into it.
Right. But and because there's like a famous artist with that name.
But when you start going like, Lord.
Yeah, somebody the other day was like, is it L-O-U-R-D? And I'm like, no. L-O-R-D.
Lured.
I've been having a lot of trouble with our address, too.
Yeah, Fifth.
Yeah. Every time they're like...
there's a fifth in there.
They're like, zit? And I'm like, what?
You and know, like, zit road or whatever.
Faith? And I'm like, what?
No.
No. It's 5-T-H. Like the number 5-T-H.
No, it's 5.
And they're like, oh, fifth. And I'm like, yeah, what...
and you should be like, what, zit?
Zerp?
Zoopity?
Weekawam?
Batman symbol?
This is hysterical history.
We talk about history, and we're funny about it or something?
Question mark?
Maybe?
Question mark. Unsure if funny, but
you be the judge. Tell us.
I'm Haley.
I'm Alexis, L-O-R-D.
Today.
It's Alexis... with an O-R-D.
Yeah. And an L. Mm-hmm. Don't forget the L. Very important. Once when I was a child, I won some award in my elementary school, and they announced my name as Alexis Ford.
So close.
Yep.
So far. If you turn it upside down and add another line, it's an F.
Mm-hmm.
See, and I'm like the opposite. There's so many different ways to spell Haley. I literally don't care if people misspell my name.
Fair. It doesn't even bother me. It's just confusing. Like, why is it happening?
When it becomes a different sound, it's weird.
Also, when I was in high school, we had a substitute teacher who also... he wasn't, like, a random substitute. He taught at our school, and he just had a free period, so he went to do that class. I think they were just lacking a substitute.
Yeah.
And he was, like, a Spanish teacher, and he was Hispanic, but he... went down the roll call, read my name, and then started laughing really loudly.
Oh.
Like he thought it was a joke.
Yeah.
And like,
like it was
other
a joke
other
name.
Kids looked at me in class like they were like, what's up with this happening? Because they thought that we had some sort of like relationship.
Like it was a joke.
I had never met him. No. I just knew other kids had his class.
Right.
And I knew I could have his class. I didn't. But yeah, he just like was like bullying me about my name. The teacher.
Weird.
It was very weird.
Strange. Have I ever said on the podcast that my town was so small growing up that the mayor used to substitute sometimes?
No. That's so sad.
And we'd be like, so are you more the mayor right now or more of a substitute? She's like, right now I'm wearing my substitute pants.
Right.
And we would like,
oh, cute.
Like rag on her about different municipal projects.
She's like, these kids are too smart. I would like the kindergartners.
We're like, please. That public clock you're building in the public park
in the middle of the road
is like nasty, and we hate the design. It's terrible.
Fix it.
We can't believe you're using our parents' tax money.
And she's
on this.
Like, it's too late.
I'm wearing my substitute pants, and you can just shut up.
La 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 la. She plugs her. Not listening.
I am the mayor, and you will be silent.
Shut up. That's great. So today. I want to start, we already started with all that nonsense.
Yeah.
But I also want to start with, we got a review on Stitcher, and I recognized the name on it.
Speaking of names.
I recognized the series of letters, I should say, because it was like J-T-A-P-W. And I was like, I've seen these letters in this configuration before. So I was like, I'm sure it's somebody we know. One of our lovely fans out there. Hello. And it was Jill. Canadian Jill.
Canada Jill, you're so sweet.
You're so great. Thank you so much. And she left us a review on Stitcher that says, hilarious and educational all at the same time. And I'm like, oh man. That's, first of all, that's the right order of things.
Yes.
Hilarious and then educational.
Yeah.
If even.
And
I appreciate
endeavor.
That you put it on there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like that you feel like you're learning something. That's good.
Good.
It says, I love this show so much. The two hosts examine obscure historical events and people, but their discussions feel more like you're sitting around a kitchen table with friends learning something new rather than forcing knowledge into your head. And I'm like, great.
History is so much more acceptable when you realize that it's just people being like, you know what I heard about so-and-so?
Yeah, it's just gossip and goofing off.
It's gossip about dead people.
Yeah, it's the best, man.
It's great.
And it's just like, it's so sad to me that people dislike history so much because they think it's so boring. And it's like, no, it's about people. Like, everything that you watch and you like is about people.
It's all just narrative.
It's just dead people.
Narratives and stories and rumors, and it's really interesting.
It's exciting.
And sometimes it is boring because, you know, life isn't always interesting.
Right. But. Like, not every day of your life is fascinating and exciting, but not every day does someone misspell your name and put a U in it like me.
Yeah. Hi, drama.
So exciting.
Shakespearean, almost.
Anyway.
Sorry, I know a thing.
It says, fun facts and lots of jokes make it way more fun to listen to than other historical podcasts I've listened to. Ooh, burn.
Ooh, the shade of it all.
But way to not mention anyone specific. We appreciate it.
It is a trend.
Yeah. They said, which tend to be as dry as a cracker.
Yeah.
It's true. I will not name names, but I listened to one last night because it was like 30 minutes and it was about my topic. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to make sure that they didn't have any secret information about it that I already know. And they didn't. And it was just like, I paused it like eight times because I just got bored. And then I was like, no, you have to listen to it.
It's like NPR, but no. Worse.
Because
like NPR can get my attention because they know how to, you know, make a story.
Yeah. But they also can be like too soothing and then you're like.
Yeah. Which is a good problem sometimes.
True.
Except people listen to it in the car all the time.
Yeah, that's dangerous.
Like, you should not be my radio ASMR.
Don't do that.
Don't.
Every week I can't wait to download their new eps. Definitely worth a listen. Thank you, Jill.
Jill, you are so sweet.
You're
and
a
tender
sweet
and
sweet little peach.
Wonderful. Yeah, Canadian peach.
Canadian peach, which I don't think they have. I mean, I'm sure they import them.
Yeah. Banned.
They
banned
do
in
not
Canada.
Grow them, I'm sure. But maybe they do. They can grow pineapples in England. They can grow peaches wherever you want, probably.
And you can build a greenhouse anywhere.
That's true. Build a greenhouse today. Grow some California peaches. Or Canadian peaches.
Canadian peaches.
Why is it Canadian? I also said California first. I'm having a time already.
Yeah, it's
and it's
gonna be
my
good,
episode.
It's going to be a good
so
podcast.
It's
going to
be exciting.
I can tell.
And before we even start, we haven't started yet.
Uh-oh.
I want, Haley, we did a Mad Lib last night. We have some historical Mad Libs and some Shakespearean Mad Libs. And we did one last night, and I want you to read it. So you probably need your glasses.
Right now?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I can read things up close.
Okay.
Uh-oh.
So, yeah, read it.
Uh-oh.
For the audience.
Because last night, she had me just pick some words. She's like, give me an adjective.
Yeah, and I wouldn't tell her what it was because it's related to today's episode. So now you can see what it is.
I know what we're talking about. Henry V, Act 4, Scene 3. Which you Shakespeare nerdos are like, ooh, yeah.
Oh, man.
Ooh, get that Crispin speech out.
And everybody else is like,
whatever.
Okay.
Nerd.
Sure.
All right. So this is Henry V.
Mm-hmm.
In Crispin Day speech. This day is called the Feast of Crispian. He that outlives this halibut and comes safe home will sashay o' tiptoe when this day is named. He that shall see this day and live old corkscrew will yearly on the vigil feast this horse, his horse cows, and say tomorrow is Saint Crispin. Then will he strip his musk and show his scars.
Gross.
Nasty. Then shall our names familiar in his weeness as household words. Nicholas Cage the King, Bedford and Exeter, Warwick and John Travolta, Salisbury and Danny DeVito. Be their groovy cups freshly remembered.
Mm-hmm.
I want to drink some groovy cups.
Groovy cups.
This story shall the good squirrel teach his son. And Crispin Crispian shall ne'er go by from this day to the ending of the thong. But beavers in it shall be remembered. We few, we sweaty few, we band of breadsticks.
Yay.
It's a very famous speech.
Very famous, all about really important details.
It's a pump-up speech before basically a suicide mission.
Yeah, pump it up.
So you can be remembered by those sweaty breadsticks.
Mm-hmm. Holla. Until the thong disappears.
Until the thong is gone.
Which we all know will never happen.
You'll be ranked among the names of legend, like Nicolas Cage.
Oh, I also have to let everyone know that we recently put up a dry erase map in our studio.
Our recording studio.
Our recording studio.
Uh-huh.
Maybe once we put up our curtains, we can call it that.
Yeah.
But we went through all of our episodes to be like, where have we done episodes? So we can kind of like have a visualization of them.
Our geological or geographical spread.
Yeah, on the map so that we know like what's been covered a lot and what hasn't been covered at all.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out we do episodes about France constantly.
Yeah.
Both of us, which makes me feel better.
Yeah.
Because Alexis of course I
worried.
Do.
Alexis was worried.
Because of course I do. But, you know, yeah. I'm a Francophile. That's what we do. Mm-hmm. We only think about France all the time. And so when I was like, oh, but a lot of these are Haley's, and I'm like, I feel better now.
I got a lot of cool science goes down in France. A lot
it's
of good,
true.
A lot of good literature, a lot of good monsters. Mm-hmm.
Lots of good stuff.
Yeah.
France is just a funny place. I've been there. It's hilarious.
The French are inherently very funny.
And easy to make fun of.
Yeah.
It's part of why I love them.
Oh, also note, every now and then we'll see someone has listened in a country and we'll be like, uh-oh, they're going to hear us talk about them.
Yeah. So people listening in Finland, sorry that we have crapped on Finland multiple times.
We do love you.
We only crap on those we love.
Like, I'm basically from the same, like, longitude.
Yeah. Well, in my...
Or latitude.
My DNA profile from my Ancestry DNA updated recently, and I'm like 2% Finnish or something.
We get it.
Which is unsurprising.
We like, the more we rib on you, the more we love you.
Yes.
Honestly.
But anyway, today we're going to talk about Charles VI of France. So we're doing France again. But this one was requested, so it's not my fault.
It's a different Charles...
Than the other ones.
Than the other
he's
Charles.
Number six.
He's the weird one.
And he's also known with the epithets. I almost said epitaphs. I always get them confused.
The epitaph.
He's also known by the epithets Charles the Well-Beloved
mm-hmm.
or Charles the Mad.
There are a lot of varying opinions on him, I guess.
Either, you know?
You know, you can never just be like the Charles the mundane. Charles the middle-ish.
I read one article for this, and some of those people's epithets were so funny could hardly handle. Hold on.
Like, epithets for the same person or different?
Different people.
Okay.
But they all had amazing ones.
Sometimes they're just like, I really just want to know everything about you. If this is what you're known for. If you're known as, like, Louis the Squiggly or something.
Squiggly.
Like, what does it mean? What did you do?
Clovis the Second, the do-nothing of Neustria.
Yeah. Yeah.
Childeric the Third, the idiot.
Yeah. They're not subtle.
No. I think that's it. That was most of them. But...
I'm Childeric. Oh, which one? The idiot.
The idiot. The third. And they're like, you mean the idiot?
I love that.
Yikes.
This conceit that he's naming himself that to strangers.
I'm the idiot.
You
one.
May know me as the idiot.
Oh, but in French, that's Charles le bien ami or l'insensé.
Cool.
There you go. I gotta speak French for this episode. People think that this Charles is the basis for Game of Thrones character King Aerys the Mad King.
Nice.
Who's Dany Aerys's father.
Yeah.
Who goes psycho, and then he gets murdered by his friend.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's crazy.
Because he lost his mind.
Because he's, like, ordering wars that do not need to happen.
Hey, why are we...
So, bye.
Why are we doing this?
Why so many people gotta die?
Because I'm the king and I said so.
Yeah. And a lot of the articles I read about this were like, this is why it's nice that, you know, even if you possibly don't like who the president is currently, I wonder if these are modern ones or not, at least we have a system where it changes.
It's a pretty good system. Right. Fairly robust.
Whereas, you know, in this version, you're going to be like, wow, somebody really should have gotten rid of him. And it's like, well.
Eventually.
You can't.
You have
They're called by God.
You have to murder them and hope that. You have to, like, wait until you're pretty sure that the stuff he's doing is, like, not stuff God would want.
Yeah, and even then, a lot of people are going to be mad at you. Yeah. And you're probably going to get beheaded.
That's when you need a good poisoner.
Yeah. Good luck. Anyway, so before all the crazy happens...
Tell me everything about this man.
He's born on December 3rd, 1368, in Paris, France. Mm. He also dies in Paris, France. He never leaves Paris, which that's not true.
I mean,
he does.
Why do you need to
Why leave? Leave?
When does he live?
1368.
Okay.
And I'm going to let you know what's going on.
Just like a really great time to be alive.
It's the best, especially in France.
You're going to hit that like... peak, like, plague times. It's going to be
it's
so good.
Real good.
It's going to be so good.
So we're going to step back a little bit to give you the context of what's happening right now.
Mm-hmm.
As you said, the plague is going to hit real good while he's alive.
He's going to get prime
so
plague.
So that's a good time.
Yeah.
And with the plague comes, you know, raiders and people just setting random things on fire for fun.
And he's in an urban center, so it's much better for him.
Yeah, it's a good place to be.
Yeah.
Also, France and England are currently experiencing the Hundred Years' War.
Which is, there's a lot of times when they're currently.
Yeah, it lasts more than 100 years. And it's weirdly named. And I've never been more interested in that war until I read the stuff about this guy.
Interesting.
Because almost always, it's like, it's a little too old for me, you know? So, like, I'm more into, like, post-Renaissance stuff. Like, I'm kind of into Renaissance stuff, but not really.
Once the Enlightenment hits, you're like, okay, now we're getting into the
Enlightenment.
Good France.
I'm really into, like, colonialism is really, like, fascinating to me, so that's a fun time, but that's way later. So, like, this kind of is boring to me. And it's like, and especially this war is, like, weirdly complicated in that it's like, it's kind of France and England are having a situation and then everyone else goes, I'm mad too at someone else.
Yeah.
And they just start punching each other. Because that's what Europe does. Like, a war starts between two people and then everybody else is like, I want to kill someone. Let me do it.
It's too cramped. There's no room.
It's true.
It turns into a bar fight where it's like, oh, we're fighting now? Yeah, a little right, like wall
a,
fight.
A stray punch hits someone, and they assume, and they take that as like, oh, but I'm mad at that guy in the corner who's nowhere near me, so I'm going to go punch him. Because I'll just say he punched me, even though he was nowhere near me.
But I was punched.
So therefore, you have to die now. And it's so weird because
you have to die now.
The Hundred Years' War isn't like... They're not fighting straight for hundreds of years.
They take,
they take long breaks, you know, like decade breaks. And so then I'm just like, what is happening?
I just never, you know, signed it.
And it's dull. Yeah. Right. And so then I'm just like, I don't care. but this made me interested in it.
Okay,
generally.
Cool. Awesome.
And Charles the Sixth, or yeah, the Sixth, he's like a puzzle piece in the middle of like a whole bunch of other like episodes, I think all of which I've done, which is not surprising because it's French. That I was like, oh, he's this, and then because of him, this happened, so it was very exciting for me.
It's going to be like a little mini-series.
I'm going to unfold it, and you're going to be like, oh, man, he's like the centerpiece of all these other, and I'm like, yeah.
Oh, man.
That's why it's exciting. But anyway, the Hundred Years' War is happening, which started in 1337, Leet, and...
nerd.
And that's because Edward III of England decided that he also had a claim on the French throne.
You know
and so
why.
He was like, I think I should be in charge of France too. And France was like, no.
We disagree.
You can't just come in and be in charge.
I mean, you could.
And he's like, but I did... I followed the line back and somebody French was like my aunt or something.
The math... maps out.
Yeah, he pulls out his, like, chart and, you know, his pointer. Is like, but look at this.
Chart.
And then everybody's like, we don't care. You're an English dude. We don't want to be English. And then he's like, well, I'm going to fight you for 150 years about it.
But you smell weird. Smell like an English pig dog. We're not putting you on the throne.
So that's what they're fighting about. England basically decided that they should have France, too, because of ancestors. And France says no. So now they're punching each other a lot.
But do you have a flag?
So Charles is born in the House of Valois, which I know mostly because of Mary and Francis.
Yeah.
He's also in the House of Valois. So I was like, cool, but also consistently bad.
Yeah.
So good luck.
Good luck.
Take luck. I'm going to read you a quote that says, the general prosperity of the previous century had collapsed in shrieking disaster for France.
Oh, no.
With repeated weather-induced crop failures a few decades earlier, which provoked a struggle over the land that became the Hundred Years' War, which was nicely accented by the 1346 arrival of the Black Death and the attendant loss of about one-third of the half... Yeah. One-third to half of the population.
Yeah, and then the peasants get all uppity and think they can, like, negotiate... wages and nonsense and
right
and it's like people today I think take for granted a lot how good we are at crops now that like we're able to feed even half as many people as we do
100% like it and that's the thing about plagues is it's like normally when a whole bunch of people die all of a sudden it's like well now we have lots of land and food and so like we can do it better but if you have all the people die at the same time when all the food fails it just becomes the same problem except that also now lots of your friends are dead and there's not as many people to attend to those farms so then it's just still bad.
And if they are going to attend to him, they're going to be like, well, now I have bargaining power, and it's terrible for you if you are noble.
Right. I have another quote that says, most of the horrible things today we associate with the Middle Ages, plague, famine, ignorance, bandits roaming the countryside, constant war, really date to this period alone.
It's rough because, like, Middle Ages historians are like, don't call it the Dark Ages, but... this time period, it's like, it's really hard
this
not to...
This very specific, like, century.
It's very, it's not good.
Is the bad one. Even, like, just half a century, really. Yes. From, like, the mid-1300s till the beginning of the 1400s. It's a bad time.
It gets real intense and dark all of a sudden.
So, Charles the Sixth gets crowned king on October 25th, 1380. At Rhymes, and he's 11 years old.
Good. That ends well, always, every time.
We've talked about other kings that have become king when they were a child, and it's always good.
It's one of those tropes of history. You don't put tiny boys on the throne.
But they're not entirely stupid about it. Mm-hmm. They leave him under the tutelage of his uncles until he decides he wants to rule alone in 1388.
Which is great, as long as your uncle doesn't kill you.
Right, and they don't.
Good for you, buddy.
I have some quotes about him that make it sound like whoever wrote these had a crush on him.
Ooh, I love
the like the historians who are writing
about him. I love it when you can, if you, I think it was on Tumblr or Twitter or something. It's like, if this, it's not like really good practice if you can tell which person in the narrative the historian has a crush on.
It's true. It shows your bias pretty strong.
Yeah.
You know?
We can tell who you want to bone.
One that says, he was handsome and chivalrous, and he found success in various tournaments and military expeditions.
Yeah.
And that one's not even nearly anything compared to, he was a dreamy, sentimental, agreeable, and pleasure-loving young man.
It does not say that. Did it say that?
I had a quote that said that.
No.
And I'm like, did you know him personally?
Oh my gosh.
If you
dreamy.
Dreamy. Right, because
radiant,
handsome and chivalrous, like you could have, it's still like very nice, mm-hmm. but like you could have evidence of that, at least somewhat.
Right.
You know?
People talk about how he looks.
And like tournaments and military stuff is just like, he's like a popular jock guy, you know? Mm-hmm. But the other one is like literally flirting with him. And I'm just like, okay.
He can't hear you.
You know he's crazy, right?
And he's dead.
It's
like a lot.
Pretty bad.
Very dead.
He's very dead. So because his father died, he becomes king when he's 11. And his four uncles, the Dukes of Anjou, Berry, Burgundy, and Bourbon.
Yeah.
They become, like, his advisor dudes. However, they're not, like, the coolest.
Mm.
They don't kill him, which is nice.
It's, like, the minimum.
Appreciate it.
Yeah.
But he technically has the right to rule when he's 14 by himself.
Mm-hmm.
So, really, he only needs their help for, like, 3 years.
Yeah.
But they're, like, no, let's finish your education and your schooling, and you can rule when you're, like, 21 by yourself.
Of course.
Which is, you know, seven more years.
That's a long time.
And one of the quotes specifically said, letting him finish his education and fully prepare to lead France out of the darkness.
Whoa.
Which I don't know if that's a quote from them, but it sounds like it was.
Yeah.
It sounds like it could be. They're like, you gotta take the time to learn so you can lead France out of darkness.
Out of the darkness.
You're the hero.
You're the champion with the flowing hair and the radiant skin.
And you're like, mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And what his uncles are doing is they're taking a crap ton of money from the treasury.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Which his dad had actually built up a decent amount of money, even though they've been having really hard times. He's been, like, tucking it away and, like, really pinching pennies, which is, you know, impressive for, anyone royal to do.
Yeah.
Like, that's really caring about your country when you're like, we have to have money and I can feel the bad coming and I see it.
It's going to get real bad.
Ugh. And like, that's part of, like, why people want monarchs, because they're hoping that you have a connection with God and God's going to tell you when the bad things are going to happen so that you can prepare for it.
If I was a monarch at this time, I would wake up every night in a cold sweat.
Yeah. I would hope that I was going to wake up in a coma.
Right.
That I was going to wake up and they were going to be like, you've been asleep for 8 years. Everything's better now.
Like certain other kings that we know.
We'll talk about later. So France is being ruled at that time not by Charles VI, obviously, but by his uncles and their creation, which is the Council of Twelve. So they basically got eight more of their friends.
Oh, my gosh.
And just had a bro club to rule France.
Every, like, evil organization everywhere is, like, the Club of Twelve.
Yeah. The Council of Twelve.
Right?
Right. That sounds like it's, like, in a fictional, like, dystopian novel.
I'm pretty sure, like, you know, I've heard evil alien councils being like the Council of 13.
Right.
12 is just slightly less ominous.
Yeah.
But
12 is God's number, Haley.
Yeah.
Like 7 is mostly God's number, but he also really likes 12.
The Council of the football team.
There's like, you know, the tribes of Israel and there's the apostles. 12.
Mm-hmm. What about that 13th guy? Wasn't there?
No.
Jesus.
There. Jesus is the 13th guy.
Please. See? Council of 13.
There you go. So Philip the Bold of Burgundy.
Okay.
Which I really like the bold.
Bold
because
Phil.
It doesn't specifically mean a positive thing.
No, he could just be like loud and boisterous.
Yeah.
He's the guy that won't shut up at the beer table.
But it does have like a positive connotation to it, at least somewhat.
Yeah.
You know, it's better than like Philip the Brash.
Right. Something with an ash sound, like rash or yeah. brash or, yeah.
Crash. Philip the Crash. But he's from Burgundy,
mm-hmm.
which is a region of France.
It's known for its outspoken douches.
Yeah. And it, they obviously have dukes from Burgundy, like this guy. I think he's a duke. And they are another royal house,
mm-hmm.
too. So it's mm-hmm. like, it's mostly Valois, Burgundy, and Orléans.
Okay.
Which will be the parties of interest. And so he is in charge of this council in 1382. So that's like 6 years before Charles decides he's doing it himself.
Bold Phil taking the helm.
Yep. And so while they're chilling, they're like, hey, we're going to get you a wife because that's your first job. Get married.
Yes.
And so they get him married to, it depends on where you read her name. It is either Isabella, Isabel, or Isabeau. But either way, she's from Bavaria, and which is like at the time
mm-hmm.
a pretty big kingdom, pretty big deal.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a pretty good marriage as far as just like alliances.
Yeah.
And the only like I feel like the only other two places that you'd really like strongly want a marriage potentially would be with England, who you're having a war with, and
don't do it.
Maybe Spain, but it might be a little early to be looking into Spain.
Yeah, I don't really know how Spain's doing in the 1300s.
Right. The next century, they'll be doing good.
Yeah.
But right now, I don't know anything about them.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, nowhere it's doing that well.
That's right. But Bavaria seems to be the logical choice.
Yeah.
And so Philip arranges this, and he specifically is using it for his own purposes, of course,
mm-hmm.
because he's inherited a countship of Flanders. And he needs German allies to help him in case England tries to invade. Because Flanders is very far north.
Yeah.
It's like on the ocean.
It's on the sea.
One
of those border areas.
Yeah. And so he's like, if I get in with the Germans, they'll help me prevent the English from attacking me.
You know, if you need bodyguards, Germans are kind of the way to go.
Right. So he's like, Bavaria is good for me, so it's good for France. Thanks, Philip. And so he introduces them, and apparently Charles, he's 16, I want to say, but he sees her and he's like, she is hot and I'm into it.
Good. That's good.
I appreciate there's a quote that says, the attraction was only physical to begin with because she did not speak French and he does not understand German. So they can't talk to each other.
but he's like,
she is fine. I like it.
Ooh, girl.
Ooh, baby. She's hot. Which, once again, he's 16 years old. So
the threshold may be somewhat low.
And he arranged for the marriage to take place immediately because he could hardly sleep till the marriage was consummated.
That's a weird way of saying putting it.
I agree.
He could hardly sleep.
He could hardly sleep until they sleep together.
Yeah.
And so he meets her and they get married 3 days later.
Cool.
Which, like, is really fast.
It's
for,
fast.
Even for royalty.
Yeah.
Usually you court somebody for like a month or two just to like double check that like they're cool. Because usually you have like, you know, other suitors potentially,
mm-hmm.
Or other prospects. And so you want to just, like, it's like going on an extended date.
Yeah.
You know, to be like, hey, is this definitely what we want to do?
Mm-hmm.
No. Luckily for Philip, Charles is like, yeah, her, good, right
that,
away.
That one.
Let's go to bed. Let's have people watch us have sex,
because yes.
that's what you do.
That's what you do. You have to have, you know, witnesses.
Yes. And so they get married and go off and do their thing. And then as time goes on, Charles is getting older, and he's like, why do I have these dudes in charge of me?
Like how old when he starts questioning?
It's like 1388 is the big break, and that's mm-hmm. when he is, I think, 19?
Sure, that's a decent age, I suppose.
I think around there.
Like, if you, like, know your shiz, 19 is perfectly old enough to be running a country.
Especially because he has been being trained to do this since he was a child.
Right.
Like, that's the thing, you know, when you're the dauphin, as you are in France.
Yeah.
Which means dolphin.
If you're the dolphin
of France, it literally does mean dolphin.
It does mean dolphin.
Like, it means, like, prince to be king, and it means duke, kind of, also. Like, head duke.
But it means dolphin.
But it literally means dolphin.
And they have, like, dolphins on their all their shields and stuff.
Then that's why.
It's like, why? Where does this cycle of dolphins
How did that connect? I don't know.
Why are you doing this?
But he's like, why are all these people in charge of me? I know what I'm doing. I'm married and, like, I know how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So why are you still here?
He's finally had sex. He's like, I know everything.
I know how to do everything. And his wife is like, he can't even speak German, and it's irritating me.
This idiot can't even speak
German. But I'm also like, why can't she speak French? I guess French isn't, like, the language yet, but, like...
Yeah, they haven't had their, like, military thing.
Yeah, but because of everything, it's like, it feels like it should be. Like, you should know how to speak French. Come on!
Frankenfile's like, hey, learn French!
But that's in, like, 200 years. It's like, everyone needs to know how to speak French.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so Philip is trying to get Charles's help with a problem he's having with English people.
I mean, more English, more problems.
That's right. And he wants to lead an expedition against Duke William of Gelderland.
That doesn't sound real.
Maybe it's not. Maybe he's not English. Maybe he's German. That sounds more German to me.
Either way. What is the, like, fake? I don't even know if it's fake. It's like the fake royal name they give What's-His-Face in A Knight's Tale.
I don't know.
Sir So-and-so from Gelderland.
But so what he wants, Philip is like, I want to fight these people.
Okay.
Because they're giving me problems.
Yeah.
And Charles is like, sure, I'll go over there. Sure. And he goes over and he talks to William and they make a speedy peace treaty and then he goes back to France.
Good job.
Diplomatically. But Philip's not happy because he wanted to fight.
He wanted the punches.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think, you know, whatever concessions he gave in this treaty, Philip's not, like, the most happy about. And he's like, no, all of that should be mine.
I wanted all the apples.
Right. And so that was in August of 1388. And then Charles is like, I can do this. And so he starts ruling by himself on November 2nd, 1388.
All right.
He's like, I can do this. I don't need you.
Good for you. Let's see how it goes. The man.
His uncles withdraw because, I don't know, if they don't, they're going to get killed, probably.
I'm just imagining them withdrawing to, like, a cave somewhere.
Yeah, they're like, now I have to hide in a cave.
With candles. The Council of Twelve will now convene.
And the former officials of his father, Charles V, all reappear. And they're like, hey, you need friends? You need advisors? We're here.
I didn't know they were completely separate. That's a little weird.
They were.
That's a little
Uncle
weird.
Uncle really took over.
Ugh.
Cool. And so, they weren't even on the Council of Twelve, I guess.
Oh my gosh.
That's not cool.
Okay.
And the governmental people from Charles V's reign are known as the Marmosets, which means little old men.
Aww.
Just very cute.
That is very cute.
And so they come back in, and Charles is like, cool, help me out. And when he takes over... economic and political situation in the country has improved significantly since he's been king, right? Cool. They were having the bad problems, and he's fixed some of them. So, like, with those treaties and stuff he's doing, he's helping them out. Mm-hmm. So that's when he gets the epithet, the Beloved.
The Beloved, good.
When he's 21, they're like, he's doing cool business.
He's doing really well.
We like him. So, the following winter, Charles is visited by anti-pope Clement VII of Avignon.
I love it.
Woo! So this is when we have three popes.
Anti-pope.
And he's the French pope that no one likes, except for Charles. And so he talks to Clement, and he's like, hey, we got to get you into Rome, baby, because then France is going to be on the tippity top.
Oh my gosh, that's going to just elevate you to the just the doorstep of heaven.
Spoiler alert, it doesn't work.
That's why we introduced him as the anti-pope.
It doesn't work.
And not the pope.
They don't recognize him as a pope anymore.
You're not the
Catholic
real
church.
You're not the real pope.
He's one of two anti-popes from this time, and they don't like him.
Gosh, and again, I just love the term anti-pope.
It's amazing. It's a great word.
It's great. There should be a supervillain called anti-pope.
That would be so good. And then they'll increase their French power in Italy, though, so he's all like, we gotta do this. They have a whole meeting about it. And I'm like, you guys are dorks. And so, but people hear about this through the grapevine that he's, like, trying to get the anti-pope installed. And, you know, that's all the gossip right now is about anti-popes because mm-hmm. it's kind of a big deal yeah. for Europe.
No one can talk about anything else.
No. And English King Richard II hears that and he's like, excuse me.
Hell no.
Because he favors Roman Pope Boniface IX, who will actually become the pope.
Like, literally anyone else but the French one.
Yeah.
To be quite honest.
But he's still considered a pope now, so he was yeah. the real pope.
The legitimate.
Outside of the two anti-popes.
Mm-hmm.
So, he's mad because he's like, France doesn't agree with me.
Of course.
And I'm like, they don't ever agree with you.
A lot of conflict between France and England can boil down to, they don't agree with me.
Yeah. France and England are the ultimate frenemies.
So that's great.
They get, like, they will be so friendly, and then they will just get, like, ridiculously angry at each other.
And it's so personal.
Yes.
It's so personal.
It's so much about the fact that they're England and France and nothing else.
Right.
Even right now.
Yeah.
Currently.
Still.
Brexit, anyone?
Yeah. They had a good, like, good century.
Yeah.
Like a
friendship.
A really good century.
Yeah. And then this. And they're like, and now we're back here. Great.
And now you do this to me again.
And now you don't want to be in my club? Then just get out of my club.
You're always like this.
Either you're in or you're out.
You're in, and then you get weird and xenophobic, and then you leave again, or you want to take over my thing. It's always something, England.
Ah! I'm just screaming.
And it's like, well, you're fussy, and I hate you.
It's fair.
Yeah.
France is pretty emotional as a country. But anyway, so in 1392, so that kicks off some talks between him and Richard,
mm-hmm.
where they're trying to figure out, Richard II, I have to check which Richard, because they're trying to figure out, like, can we come to an agreement on anything?
No.
Basically.
I doubt it.
So he enters peace talks with Charles in 1392, but he unfortunately also becomes ill at that time with a fever and convulsions. And this will kick off his 44 recorded attacks of madness.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. They're attacks?
Attacks.
Oh, no.
So.
What does that mean?
Well, you know.
Tell me.
So growing up, when he's younger,
uh-huh.
Charles has no signs of mental illness or instability.
Uh-huh.
Like, he's totally normal and everybody's like, good time.
Yeah.
And he's got a lot of people paying a lot of attention to him.
Yeah.
So if somebody saw him being weird, they would have written it down.
Right.
But they didn't. So we're pretty sure he's pretty chill until he gets into his early 20s.
Mm-hmm.
Which leads a lot of people to think that he has schizophrenia, because that often shows up in your early 20s. I'm glad to be out of my early 20s because my grandma has schizophrenia, and it was a concern to me. So, bye. Other people say he might have had bipolar disorder, which, like, I guess if he has really severe bipolar disorder, but my family, like, lots of people in my family have bipolar disorder. I kind of have, like, a watered-down version of bipolar disorder,
mm-hmm.
and I just don't think it makes you this crazy.
All right.
Alone.
I mean, so, I'm still waiting to hear what he do.
Yeah. Other people think he might have had typhus or encephalitis.
Yeah.
Which is entirely possible.
There's also that. It's like, it could be mental illness. It could be physical illness.
It could be that his brain's on fire.
Yeah.
Who knows?
It could just be that maybe he's, like, not a great person.
Right. And,
or maybe he's just, like, making stupid mistakes.
And specifically with encephalitis, it's marked by character change, impulsiveness, aggressiveness, and intemperate activity. So it, like, comes and goes.
I feel like that's a really long time to have encephalitis. Because it's an infection, isn't it?
I think so, but I don't know. I don't know when he gets it, and I don't know when.
I may be thinking of meningitis as, like,
meningitis is definitely an infection.
Being a, like, much more severe, fast acting thing.
I don't know a ton about encephalitis. I just know that it's like that your brain is cooking, so it's bad.
It's
also porphyria, which is another one that a lot of people think that a lot of royalty who were crazy had, and. It has actually apparently been diagnosed for his ancestors, that they're, like, pretty sure that's what they had. So they think genetically he might have gotten that, because it is a hereditary disease.
Mm.
And it has many painful physical symptoms, like inflammation of bowels, painful weakness of limbs, and sometimes loss of the power of feeling. So sometimes you can't feel things, like, touching you.
Interesting. And it makes you a little weird.
Severe attacks can result in visual and auditory disturbances, delirium, and progressive senility.
Uh-oh.
So, yeah. Uh-oh. Senile.
Yeah.
So it can be bad. And his immediate ancestors, his mother, Princess Joan of Bourbon, she also was seen as unstable. She had a nervous breakdown in 1373 after the birth of her seventh child, which, like, who wouldn't?
Yeah.
She's
probably just bummed out.
And at 12 years old, she married Charles V, who's the wise of France. And he had gout, and his hand, like, in his hands and feet, and he died when he was 43.
Mm.
So, probably not the best genes from either of them.
Nah, but no. they won't marry outside of the pool, so it's right. Gonna keep getting worse.
I have a long quote here of the first, incident
Uh-oh.
Of his madness
Uh-oh.
That's written very much in a style I appreciate yeah. to the point that I'm going to have to censor some of it. It says, soon after, in 1392, he found himself leading a campaign to Brittany in order to capture and royally F up a man who attempted to murder a close friend.
Yeah, okay. So far, normal.
Normal. The failed assassination unnerved Charles, and he was in a fervor to come at the bro who so brazenly came at his best bro.
At the bro.
At the bro.
Bro, you came at my bro, bro.
Yeah. No, you gotta die, bro.
Bro.
He was disconnected and impatient to the point of fury. Eventually, on a brutally hot day, when they're on their journey to Brittany, a leper ran up to Charles and screamed of coming betrayal.
Okay.
He continued to do so for a half hour, trailing behind the procession.
Can someone murder him?
This did not bode well because screaming treason at a mentally unstable king is a lot like a hypochondriac finding a lump.
Yeah, it's bad. It's, yeah. like, not the best.
And, like, what are kings most afraid of? It's that, like, their closest yeah. friends are going to destroy them.
Yeah, that, like, nothing they know is safe
yeah,
or that they can trust.
Everyone else wants to get their power. And he's mm-hmm. already had problems with this with his uncles.
Yeah.
Who were, at that point, his closest family members. So he's kind of primed for it to be an issue.
Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, nowadays you're like, I mean, maybe you don't trust the sick man on the side of the road.
Yeah.
But, you know, everything's like an omen.
And a lot of people then are sick.
Right.
Like, so that doesn't mean, like, he's a crazy weirdo.
Yeah.
Like, it's just a random citizen.
Mm-hmm.
My quote says, it's a slippery slope to crazy town.
A little slip and slide to crazy.
Whoa. Around noontime, a page dropped off from the heat, so he, like, passed out,
mm-hmm.
and he dropped the king's lance that he was holding.
Uh-oh, what?
Like, a page is holding it for him.
And he dropped on it?
No, he just dropped it.
Oh, okay. I'm like, holy crap!
No, but it goes clang, clang, clang.
Uh-huh.
And Charles is so startled by the noise that he charges at his own men, and in an hour-long rampage, killed and wounded several of his party before Whoa. Falling into a coma.
Uh-oh. That's, like, not the best.
Specifically, the king managed to kill 4 knights before he could be restrained.
That's a tricky one because he can't, like, attack him.
Yeah, you just have to, like, tackle him.
You can't, like, really defend yourself.
No,
because he's the king, and if you hurt him, they're gonna murder you.
Yeah, rough.
It's bad.
So the trip is cut short, and they take Charles back to Paris.
They're like, "How was your trip, honey?" It's like, he's in a coma now.
Yeah.
It wasn't great.
No explanation is ever discovered for the outburst, but one of the people I read said, who wrote this article, said, it is fun to point out that the first man he killed was known as the Bastard of Polignac. Polignac? Don't know.
That is fun.
And then there was, I didn't read it because it was, like, just too much
because
it's Reddit. But
oh,
especially if you go to historian pages on Reddit, like, people know their shiz and people do a lot of research to answer questions on there. And then it's just too much for me.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we like a more watered down, digestible version of history. And that's not what they have. They got dense. And so, but the point being, though, I briefly looked at you know, a question on there where someone was asking, like, did they ever talk about this guy in anything else? I've only ever heard his name in these stories. And basically the other historian was like, no. Like, I've tried really hard to find any other information about him, and it's always connected to these stories and nothing else.
The bastard?
Yes. Which is strange, because people point it out a lot.
I mean, maybe it's just that that's his only claim to fame. That's his one-hit wonder.
Maybe, but they don't know why he's called that or, like, anything else about him. It's very bizarre. Someone wrote it down that was his nickname, and then everyone... It's one of those things that all historians quote when they talk about the story, and no one knows anything about him.
It sounds to me like it's just a thing that everyone knew at the time, but that was, like, the only thing he ever did. So now no one's like... Like, well, wait, who is he? And they're like, oh, you know, it's like the bastard.
Oh, yeah.
You know him. Everyone knows him. But everyone knows. No one else wrote anything down about him. And he's a bastard, so, like, no one's going to claim him.
Yeah, like, who cares?
Who cares?
Whatever.
That's so funny.
Okay, sorry. I mentioned earlier that this was a request, but I forgot to say who requested it.
Yes.
And it was Troy C. from Ottawa. So thanks, Troy.
Hell yeah,
so many Canadians today just killing it.
Just murdering the thing.
So, thanks for the suggestion. I hope you enjoy. Back to the show. So, as he attacked his men, apparently he was reported to have said, "Forward against the traitors! They wish to deliver me to the enemy!"
And they're like, what?
Huh? And then one of them gets stabbed to death.
Oh, he's serious.
Oh, about us?
Wait, we're the traitors?
We were going to kill the other guy.
We just wanted to kill the other guys.
And then he became insensible and mute, and then passed out.
All of his, like, dying nights are like, my lord, what the hell?
So this is the beginning of many instances where Charles has an episode.
Yeah, I was going to be like, maybe they're just exaggerating about schizophrenia. It's like, it might be.
No.
Maybe it was heat stroke. Maybe.
His attacks normally last from 3 to 9 months.
Oh, no.
And are interspersed with about 3 to 5 months periods of sanity for the rest of his life.
On the other hand, if you, like, don't treat schizophrenia, do you have, like, moments of, like, months of clarity?
I have no idea.
Is that how it works?
I don't know a ton about it.
I don't really know that much about schizophrenia that's not, like, movie schizophrenia.
Right. It's not good.
No.
Especially if it's not treated at all.
Right.
So, and his episodes become increasingly violent over time,
mm-hmm.
which is impressive because the first one was murdering 4 people.
Yeah.
And it led a lot of the people in proximity to him to be nervous.
Well, yeah. They're like, what's happening?
Can you imagine?
And if we ask him about it, he's going to think we're the traitors.
Especially, like, if you worked with his dad.
Yeah.
And his dad was supposed to be all wise and cool and saved all this money and really smart. And he had gout, but, like, who doesn't have gout? It's like, 1300s.
Who amongst us does not from time to time?
And that's not a mental illness. It's just, like, a physical thing.
Yeah.
And so you're like, cool. And he raised his son, and his son seems cool. Especially, like, he's so put together when he's, like, 19,
right.
20.
He seems like, oh, this is going to be fine. It's going to be another smooth sailing king.
He's doing great, and we really need a good king right now. And then he gets brought home, and you're like, oh, I thought you were going to go on that mission. And they're like,
he started shouting, and then he killed
He started killing us. 4 people died, and now he's in a coma.
I'm like, oh, no.
And you're like, uh-oh. But you're also like, maybe it was like he was just, you know, overheated or something weird.
What are those kingly whimsies?
And then it keeps happening.
Oh, no, it's happening.
And you're just like, oh, no. Anyway,
it happened again.
It's a bad time. There's also, we're going to talk about it in a little bit, but there's also a lot of information about his wife and about her being like a bitch, basically.
Okay.
And I don't know how to feel about her. I don't love her.
Mm-hmm.
She's got problems.
Issues.
But I feel like a lot of it is just because she's a woman who has power a long time ago.
Right. No one likes that.
No. Because if your king, you know, as we've seen in the past, if your king has episodes where he randomly falls into a coma or he randomly starts being insane.
Yeah.
Someone has to be in charge.
Right.
And it's not going to be him.
There needs to be a VP, so to speak.
Yes. And so in this case, the VP is his brother, Louis, of Orléans.
Yeah.
and his wife.
That's definitely the last Louis we're going to see in French history.
No more ever.
No more Louis after this one.
But so, yeah, his his younger brother and his wife are the other people.
Okay.
Which,
cool.
Yeah.
He did the thing again where he murdered everyone. We're going to need you to come in early.
So about a year later.
Uh-oh.
His wife is having a masked ball for the marriage of one of her ladies-in-waiting.
Oh, no. That's gotta be. I mean, for someone who thinks everyone's out to get him, a masked ball is, like, just a trigger party.
Yeah. This one's actually not his fault.
Yeah. So. Like, this almost sounds like they're trying to set him off.
No, like.
They're gas-tanking
him. This is actually entirely not his fault. Mm-hmm. This is just a thing that happens.
Yeah.
But it's not a good thing. So, as part of the party, Charles and five courtiers disguise themselves as savages.
Oh.
That's fun. Hilarious. You know those starving people who attack people in the streets? Let's be them.
Let's be those people.
And so basically they dress up in these linen costumes that are smeared with pitch so that they're dark colored.
Uh-huh.
And they got feathers on them. And they're wearing masks. And you're supposed to guess who they could be. That's like, it's like a game.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, who's that? And you're supposed to be like, which one's the king? You know? It's fun.
Fun party games.
Woo! And so him and his five friends, it says they dress up as wild men, half human, half beast. And they're also wearing like ugly pieces of fur and stuff.
Yeah, sure.
All of them are apparently chained together. I don't know why.
You know, it's a party.
And they're dancing, and they're acting crazy, and they're swearing and hooting, and everybody's like, ha!
I'm gonna swear.
It's so funny. Who could they be? I have a quote that says, despite strict orders not to light the room's torches until the dance was over, the king's drunken brother approached with a flaming torch to peer more closely, with the inevitable result that the costumes caught fire.
Yeah. That's the thing about having costumes that are, like, made out of, you know.
Pitch.
Pitch.
It's supposed to be on fire.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the six of them all get set on fire.
All at once. They can't escape each other.
Yep.
That is horrifying.
Charles is saved by the Duchess of Berry, who throws her voluminous skirts over him.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's fun.
Hi. You know, to save him. Yeah. That's all. And another one of his compatriots is able to jump into a washing vat. Like, just water.
Yeah.
And so he's okay. But the other four and his brother all die.
Oh, no.
Different brother than the one I mentioned earlier.
It's so weird that they have so many brothers when, like, when you're describing them growing up, it's like, oh, this is clearly an only child.
No. He has many brothers.
No. There's other. There's
and he's not the dumbest one of them. Clearly it's this guy who's now dead.
Right.
Himself on fire.
I wonder.
Apparently, Queen Isabeau faints in terror, which is fair, because now her party is ruined.
Right.
And her husband almost died from fire.
Basically hell.
The event is called the Bal des Ardents, which is the Dance of Burning Men. So that's fun.
You know, let's go have Burning Man pie.
Get it? Burning
we'll
Man.
We'll go to Burning Man and set each other on fire.
This is the first Burning Man.
The first Burning Man.
Where people actually burned.
1300s.
So fun. There was such great music there.
Yeah.
And people on fire.
It was great. We all got, like, dirty and wore fur all over ourselves.
Pretended to be savages. Yeah. Real chill. Just like they do now at Burning Man.
I got some woman's skirt.
Just like at Burning Man now, right?
Yeah. It's just like Burning Man.
I've never been.
I've heard Burning Man is getting a lot more...
commercial.
Corporate.
Yeah. Well, of course.
Like, a whole bunch of Silicon Valley CEOs are like...
I mean...
It's basically their vacation now.
As is with everything.
Yeah.
Nothing gold can stay.
Get out!
So, in order to fix his crazy problems, because that episode, you know, of, like, that event really kicks off the crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people think it's because it gave him, like, PTSD, which is fair, especially because all those people died and he easily could have been one of them.
Also, for at least a few minutes, you're chained to a bunch of burning to death people.
Screaming.
Yeah.
There's a picture of it I'll show you later.
Ooh, is that one with the guy with the dead eyes? And you're like, how old is he?
No. It's a different one.
Okay.
It's very pretty.
It's very beautiful.
I love the art. And we'll post it on our Facebook page. But for, to fix his mental problems, because he's having a real hard time after that, a surgeon drills some holes into his head.
Oh, no.
Hoping to relieve the pressure on his brain.
I mean, that's always the first step
yes.
is to drill into the brain.
Yeah, into your head.
Brain surgery should be your first attempt.
You're feeling a headache and you're getting kind of crazy. Yeah. And you're like, how about we just puncture some holes in my skull? And apparently he felt momentary relief after the operation. But then he suffers a relapse in 1395. So it doesn't really work.
Oh, no.
Which is like a year or two later. So at different times he forgets his own name. He doesn't recognize his wife when she's brought to him.
Oh.
Which is like, the only mental health treatment anyone could think to try, apart from enemas, of course.
I mean, yeah, that's been a standby for centuries.
Yes. Enemas, head holes, talk to your wife.
You can bore into the skull, you can shove things up the butt, or you can talk to your wife.
And one of the authors of these articles wants you to not feel bad for the queen that she's married to this crazy man, because in that same year she authored a decree forcing French Jews to sell their belongings and leave the country, mostly to Poland.
Yeah.
She's German.
Everyone loves the Jews.
Germans love Jews, man.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, she's not, like, the coolest. But also, she is married to a psycho who might murder her, so I get it.
I guess. If you're married to a psycho, may as well get rid of the Jews.
I mean, they're not related, but I'm like, I don't expect her to be perfect, I guess. So Charles spends the winter of 1395 to 96 claiming to be St. George and insisting that his family crest be redesigned to reflect it.
I mean, that's how I spend my winters, mostly.
And everybody's like, uh-huh, mm-hmm. and hoping that they're like looking at their watch that doesn't exist, hoping that time will just pass by faster.
I hope this stops.
I hope we get out of this again. In 1397, he becomes aware that his brain is clouding again, and he can feel it coming.
Yeah.
And he requests that they take his dagger from him, because he's worried that he's going to hurt somebody or himself.
Oh, no.
Which is, like, that's a sad thing, is, like, it really seems like when he is coherent, he's kind of great. Like, he seems like a cool dude, and, like, he is worried about how his behavior is affecting mm-hmm. other people.
And he has a sense of, like, regret and, like, not wanting it to happen again.
Right, but he has such a sense of duty, and he's trapped in mm-hmm. doing that. Like, he knows that he's king, and that's how it is.
Right.
And it's, like, kind of terrible for everyone, him included. And so he gets some university doctors to come in, and they believe that he's a victim of sorcery, of course.
Because, I'm surprised they didn't come to that conclusion earlier.
I don't know.
Maybe they don't jump to magic as quick when you're the king.
Yeah, maybe not. They went for science first with the holes.
Yeah.
And around 1398, some attempts were made to exorcise him.
Okay.
And apparently Charles thought that could be the possibility, too, because they're kind of running out of options for as far as what they know could be happening.
Has anyone tried to be like, maybe it's because you tried to back the anti-pope?
No, not that I read. But he said, apparently, if there is any one of you who is an accomplice in this evil I suffer, meaning like cursing me, I beg him to torture me no longer, but let me die.
Okay. I'd rather be dead.
Yes. He really hates everything about it. So he's, you know, claiming his name is George, whatever, and being crazy. He starts running from room to room until he's exhausted and passes out. And wailing that his enemies are coming to get him. Later, when he keeps himself in the dark, he's, like, shuttered up in an apartment.
Mm-hmm.
And anyone who gets near him, he, like, attacks viciously.
Oh, no.
So he's just, like, hiding in a dark corner. And apparently before this, he was, like, you know, he won tournaments. And he was really into, like, military expeditions.
Yeah.
And he was, like, he loved the outdoors and they'd go hunting all the time. And then now he's just, like, hiding in a dark room alone and no one's allowed to come in. So it's rough.
That's sad.
Yeah. He'd smash furniture and urinate on his clothes. And his daughters, he has quite a few kids. I think they end up having like 12 kids. So that's what happens when you marry out of your family.
Good job.
Nailed it.
And you have a hot wife.
And your wife is hot. Not all of them might be his, but we'll talk about that in a minute.
I mean, that's fair.
Once he gets like real crazy,
mm-hmm.
you like have to wait until his sanity like is in for a couple weeks. And then you're like, now I can have sex with him.
Yeah.
But his daughters, like, live in a room, like, close by to whichever room he shutters himself up in. And on one occasion, he regains his senses, like, in the middle of, like, screaming.
Mm-hmm.
And he realizes that his daughters can hear him, screaming and freaking out. And, like, goes to see them, and they're, like, scared of him.
Right. That's terrible.
And he's just, like, devastated.
Yeah.
That, you know, that he doesn't seem to have control over himself, and that that's happening entirely, like, separate.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, just real sad. Hilarious.
Your family is afraid of you.
Yeah. And he would also go on wild sprints around the palace. Like, he wouldn't just run inside. He'd, like, start running outside.
Yeah.
And so much that, I just read. Which often ended in the royal gardens, where the royal person was found in his royal nudity, squatting in the royal dirt. And they had to come up and grab him. But he'd do it so often that they started walling up the doors to the, like, corridors. Mm-hmm. So he couldn't just run out.
Right.
Because it would look like he's going to run straight into the wall.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Mm-hmm.
For some months in 1405, so this is happening over many years, Charles refuses to change his linens, to bathe, to be shaved. And as a consequence, he is afflicted by skin trouble and lice.
Yeah.
I have another quote that says, he would stop caring about personal grooming to the point where his servants eventually had to cut him out of his clothes.
Yeah, it's like that bad level of not doing good.
It's real bad.
Yeah.
And so they try to do some shock treatment on him. What they mean when they say shock treatment is they arrange for men to hide in his room with blackened faces.
Oh my God.
And then jump out at him to scare him into...
That's gonna help. That's gonna help
into snapping out of it.
No. That sounds like the worst idea possible.
It did work.
It did work?
I mean, really? After that, he agreed to, like, take a bath.
Okay.
So.
I don't know.
But that probably means he was already out of it.
Right.
Or, like, he was coming out of it.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Or you just, like, scared the hell out of him so bad. He's like, fine, I'll take a bath. Just and don't murder me.
At the same time, in 1405, Pope Pius II, he wrote that he was refusing to bathe and everything, and that he threatened to kill anyone who touched him because he said he was made of glass and he might break.
Mm.
So they couldn't touch him.
Interesting.
Weirdly, at this time period, that is a very common delusion.
Yes,
lots of people write about it.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as we know, he's the first person to say that, like, that anyone wrote down.
Right.
That he said that because they were like, that's weird, because he's crazy, so that everybody's writing about everything he does.
Right.
He's afraid that he's gonna shatter if anyone touches him, so he forbades his courtiers to come even close to him. One of the theories is that it's associated with depression and anxiety and a morbid fear of your surroundings in general.
Yeah.
So that they believe everything nearby is potentially lethal to them.
Right.
And that kind of manifests, like, that anxiety manifests as feeling like you're made of glass.
I've heard of it, people writing about tryptophobia, I think. That's,
yeah,
like the fear of holes.
Yes.
You know, like in locust pods or whatever. And as sort of like a mimetic sudden illness that, like, hasn't really ever existed, but suddenly it becomes popular and people start noticing and they're like, oh yeah, I definitely have that.
Oh yeah.
And, they're like, oh yeah, like, people used to think that they were, like, made out of glass, which people don't really do anymore.
Right. It was, like, really popular for a century and then it disappears entirely.
Right. But then I'm like, given what, like, time period it is, it's not a bad idea to think everything's going to kill you.
Right.
It probably will.
And not only that, but, like, because, you know, at this time, obviously, they don't have a great understanding of, like, mental health, but the extreme mental stress that everyone is under from every side, it's like, why wouldn't they have a breaking point where they're like, I'm made of glass?
Yeah.
It makes perfect sense to me and why it goes away. Because some people are like, because I was reading things and people were like, is it an illness if it just disappears, like, because it wasn't cured or anything? And I'm like, I mean, it's just a delusion. And it's like, people have other delusions now.
Right.
But, like, this is the time period delusion for these people because they're all under the exact same stressors.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what's happening.
And then, like, someone's like, it's like I'm made of glass. And everyone's like, yeah, that's exactly what it is.
That's exactly how I feel. Right. And it's probably not, like, they treat it very literally, like, when they're talking about it. But it's probably more just the feeling of, like, having a panic attack and being overwhelmed. And you feel like you're just going to die, you know? And so, like, that's just how it manifests.
Yeah.
But anyway, The illness is noted in the anatomy of melancholy.
They got the melancholy.
Melancholy. Mm-hmm. A lot of writers write about it. Miguel de Cervantes, he wrote Don Quixote. He also wrote a play about this disorder called The Glass Lawyer.
Mm.
René Descartes mentions the glass delusion in Meditations on First Philosophy, which is the text where he apparently proves the existence of God.
Oh, you know, just like that.
Casual. I was like, really? I'm going to have to read this. Apparently, people wrote a lot of satirical poems and stories about the disorder. And the article that I read wanted me to know, it wasn't just known, it was famous.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, because it's so weird.
Yeah.
That, like, why wouldn't authors be like, that's an interesting idea.
Right. And when kings start getting stuff, it's like. Yeah. You know, you gotta write about it.
And this is from, like, the 15th to the 17th century. So it's, like, late Middle Ages, early Renaissance time. Mm-hmm. There's tales of people who have been afflicted with glass bones, glass heads, glass arms, glass hearts in medical and literary texts of the time. One unfortunate man was convinced his buttocks was made of glass and that sitting down would smash it into flying shards.
Interesting. I mean, so can't you just sit down? Can't you just reach back and test it?
No.
No.
Too scared.
Too scared.
He was afraid to leave the house in case a glazier tried to melt him down into a window pane.
He's going to melt my ass.
Yeah, the glass man is going to get you.
The glass man. The glass ass man.
Another guy traveled to Murano, an Italian island famous for its beautiful glass, hoping to fling himself into a kiln and be transformed into a goblet.
Whoa.
Yet another case tells of a scholar who believed that the surface of the world was made of glass, beneath which lurked a tangle of serpents. He did not dare leave his bed for fear that he would smash the glass and fall into the snakes.
Yeah, sure. Fair.
I mean, it's a fun way for you to not get out of bed.
I mean, I understand. Sometimes I don't want to get out of bed.
Right. Yeah. And, like, why not?
Right. Why not?
Say the earth is made of glass and there are snakes.
And there are snakes under it.
Because I'll tell you, we're on the second floor, so yeah. You can get out of bed.
Yeah. Yeah, the wife's like, we're on the second floor, you can get out of bed.
And she just pushes him and he's like, ah!
Snakes!
Snakes! They're gonna get me. Okay. So, the four humors theory, as we've spoken of multiple times, is prevalent at the time, and different personalities have different, like, stronger bile of whatever kind, fluids.
Yeah.
And all of this glass delusion is under the umbrella of melancholia, and that is caused by an excess of black bile.
Yeah.
A lot of people who have this are, like, poets. And, like,
right.
Sensitive people.
Like the...
Scholars.
The pallid Victorian sad boy is kind of the archetype of melancholy.
Philosophers. Really smart people have this. Mm-hmm. It's the smart disease. And in a way, I'm like, the people you consider, like, kind of soft boys, you know, that aren't like, real tough.
Yeah.
And then it would make sense that they think they're glass. But the reason you have this is because you have too much black bile, and the way to fix that is, I don't know, take some nasty herbs or something.
You gotta balance them out. What's the opposite of melancholy?
I don't know. Like, what's the opposite? Fluid?
Yeah.
I have no idea. Then black bile? Probably the yellow?
Yellow? Gross. Bile? I don't know.
Anyway, also people think that Russian composer Peter Tchaikovsky might have had this, because he reported he was terrified that his head would fall off while he was conducting, unless he held his chin. So apparently he used to hold, I don't know how, but he used to hold it and conduct with the other hand.
He just looks bored all the time.
Just very straight. I don't know. So he might be like gripping it. I don't know what he's doing. But, and people don't, like, that doesn't sound like it's specifically a glass delusion, but it is a weird, quirky thing that I'm like, I get why there might be a connection.
Sure.
Anyway, so Charles is having problems, but he has so many kids that it's like, it's fine. Because one of them is going to be king soonish, like, probably.
Yeah, and he's got at least one boy, right?
Oh, he has a ton.
He's got to have...
I think he has four sons. And whoa. he's got like eight daughters.
Yeah.
But, like, that's great because I'm like, then you got backup sons. Mm-hmm. And you need those daughters to marry to other people.
Yeah.
So both ways, good time.
Form alliances.
Right.
You better be training up that oldest son, like, real bad.
See, the problem is, They are. But, so he has one son that he names Charles, who dies when he's a baby.
Oh, of course.
So then, you know.
It happens.
Yeah. And so then they get new ones. And he has two other sons who are adults, who both get to about 18 years of age.
Oh no, do they have
And
it?
That's Louis of Guyenne and John of Touraine. And then both of them die mysteriously.
Oh.
Of something medical.
Okay.
But there's no information about it. So they're the two oldest top sons.
I would leave town. If I was an advisor, I'd be like, great, we have two healthy, normal heirs, and they both die. It's like, time to leave town.
Goodbye.
Time to move to England.
But he still has one son, Charles.
It's not enough.
He names that one Charles, too.
Charles, the second attempt.
So Charles and Isabeau are having a time because he's crazy and violent and scary, and she still has to, like, have sex with him and stuff, and it sucks. And so, and apparently during his delusions, he's very, like, aggressive towards her, and he gets really lustful, and so she is scared, and so she gets him a girl, Odette de Champ d'Hiver, to take her place. So she's like, I don't want to die. I'm going to give him this girl. Yeah. She can die.
She can die.
Which is like, you know, not the coolest thing to do.
Yeah.
But I do get it.
I get it.
And in the meantime, she is hooking up with Louis, who is Charles's brother.
Oh. Oh, no.
So people aren't positive that her kids are all Charles's.
Yeah.
They might be Louis's. Either way, though, royal, so...
It's the
could have been worse.
Same bloodline. Honestly, doesn't matter.
Could have been worse. And like she's spending a lot of time with him because whenever Charles is crazy, they're taking a care of the affairs together.
Right.
Because he's like substituting for Charles, and then she's like actually in charge royalty. So like he needs her like approval for stuff.
Although that does mean that he's also cheating on his wife.
Yeah.
Mm.
It's a good time.
Cool.
If he's married, I don't know.
Oh, I thought he was. That like him and his wife were taking care of. They were the VPs.
No. He and Charles's wife are taking care of. Okay. Stuff. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Just the two of them. I don't know if he's married. It never says. Mm. But we don't care if he's cheating on his wife because that's what men do. Right. I guess. It's only important that she's cheating on him.
Right.
And we don't know that this is true, but like, why wouldn't it be true? They're spending a lot of time together. He's supposed to be handsome, probably.
And she's hot.
And
she's the queen.
And she has nothing to do. And apparently they've been close for quite some time. Which, you know, why not? They live in the same house and they hang out all the time. Yeah. Even before Charles is, like, super crazy. And then, you know, whatever.
Super freaky.
But apparently most people... They doubt the legitimacy of her, mostly her younger children, because she has the older ones earlier with Charles when he's normal.
Right.
So they're like, probably she's not having kids with him anymore.
Right.
Because he's crazy. And she got him a girlfriend because she's like, leave me alone.
I'm not doing this.
And her relationship with Louis is apparently at its height when young Charles, who's now the Dauphin, is born. So maybe he's Louis's son and not Charles's, but we don't know. But she's also apparently much more worried about her younger kids than her older kids. Like she's doting on them a lot more and spending a lot more time on them, which generally would make you assume that she cares about them more because perhaps she values the relationship with their father more.
Sure.
Which might be Louis. But whatever. But while this is happening, not only, you know, is she getting around and stuff, but also other people are like, you know, the king's probably not going to live, like, a lot longer. So the Dukes of Burgundy and Orléans start fighting.
Yeah.
Which are the Burgundians? I don't know how to say it. Are led by John the Fearless. Which, like, what a great epithet. Cool,
yeah.
Who he's the successor of Philip the Bold. So Burgundians just have a good time with them.
I told you, they have a reputation.
And they decide that they're going to murder Louis, who's the Duke of Orléans, in 1407.
Cool.
Because if he's gone, then they can hopefully take over.
Yeah.
Because, like I said, there's a couple royal families, and, they can be in charge.
You got to get rid of them.
Bye. And so... The queen has, that's her boyfriend, Charles's brother, same Louis. And she's recently lost her 12th child shortly after its birth and is, like, pretty upset about it.
Mm-hmm.
And yet still, it says she openly joined the party of her lover's murderers and soon became best friends with John the Fearless.
Wow.
Because she knows how to survive.
Yeah,
and good. She doesn't really seem to care about nobody. French people are annoying to her.
She's out for her.
She didn't want to be here.
Mm-hmm.
She had to because they married her here.
None of you speak German.
The Duke is opposed to the Count Bernard the VII of Armagnac, who married his daughter to the Orleans heir. And so then that's why they hated each other, I guess.
Okay.
Who cares?
I'm very lost.
It was confusing and I'm not going to read it again. But the most important thing you need to know is that the Burgundians go up to England and they tell Henry V that they will ally with him for the Battle of Agincourt,
mm-hmm.
which is not okay.
It's great for England.
It's really not cool.
It's super shady.
And this is where I was talking to you before. I said, like, I never understood why this battle went this way. Because
mm-hmm.
it is very confusing.
Right.
Like, the French people in Agincourt have way more soldiers.
Yes.
And presumably they are just as competent
mm-hmm.
at whatever they're doing. But not only do the English have better weapons than they do, they also have this king who's given them problems
yeah.
for, you know, 10 years, basically,
it's
or
not,
20 years.
Not good.
And their own people have betrayed them. And Burgundy is, like, I think pretty far north,
mm-hmm.
so just lets them in as deep as possible,
just opens
basically.
The doors.
Yeah. Because they're like, well, if I'm friends with England, when they take over France, they'll put me in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then I get to be king.
Cool.
And I'm like, that's this is bad. You're terrible.
You're a terrible French.
Dude, Napoleon would be so mad at you.
This goes against everything Napoleon taught
if he
us.
He knew that you were doing this. He'd go back in time to kill you.
Yeah.
But anyway, so the French in Agincourt, if you don't know, they lose. If you haven't read Henry V.
If you don't know.
They lose.
They, spoilers, they lose.
Sorry. It's a big plot point in Henry V, which is why we read that at the beginning. Because it's all connected.
If you are English or French, you absolutely know
yeah.
what
yeah.
happens.
You know.
It's a big deal.
It sucks.
It's like Waterloo and Agincourt are the two big ones.
And they both involve the same people.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the French army is 5 times bigger than the English army, and they still get slaughtered.
They lose.
It's rough.
It's like the weapons are important, the leaders are important, and then they have, like, traitors. It's a bad time.
It sucks.
Mm-hmm.
So, right before this happens,
mm-hmm.
younger Charles is like, Dad, Mom is cheating on you.
Dad.
And she sucks.
Yeah.
We need to get rid of her.
Okay.
And Charles VI is like, okay.
Let's hang her.
Agree.
Murder her.
No.
No? Oh, good.
They decide to go to her place she's staying at. She's not even living at the palace anymore.
She has her own
she's
quarters.
She's in Vicennes.
Yeah.
And she's apparently living there with her pets and free to do as she wants. I have a quote that says, of course, because this is what matters. In the course of years, she has become abnormally fat. suffering from gout, she is unable to get around without a wheelchair.
Oh, dear.
She has also developed a phobia of open spaces. Why not?
Why not?
She's hiding.
I mean,
so they go there and they're like, hey, I don't know. You don't get to be queen anymore?
Hey.
But, like, she's already basically not. So I don't know what the point is.
Right. She's not one of these queens who's like, I'm going to rule.
So they arrest her most recent lover, Louis de Bois-Bourdon, who's a different Louis because the other one's dead. And they torture him and strangle him and throw him in the Seine in a leather sack.
Yeah.
And they banish her to Tours. And that's it.
I mean, just leave her there. She's fine. She's not doing anything.
Right.
She did her job. And, you know, just let her retire. She's retired.
But.
They're like, you have to retire in a different place.
Uh-huh. But. You know how Henry V ends, right, Haley?
Yes.
What happens?
I'm not. It's going to be spoils.
It's not spoilers for Shakespeare.
Tell us how it ends.
Do you want me to tell you?
Yes.
Okay. So, especially if you've ever seen Kenneth Branagh.
Mm-hmm.
Very cute.
Yeah.
Very funny. Great, great version.
Yeah.
But at the end, he gets married to a French lady,
mm-hmm.
and all looks good because their son is going to be the king of England and France.
Mm-hmm.
United them.
The end.
Forever.
Right?
Just like now.
Yeah, just like today.
They're the same. No.
No.
Apparently, mm-hmm. as far as I can understand it, Isabel or Isabeau brokers this deal.
How?
Because at that time, Charles is out of it.
Mm-hmm.
He's gone. Louis is dead. And so Isabel is the only, like, coherent person who's any amount of in charge.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe this is before they banish her. Or the English don't know that yeah. she's been banished.
You're right.
And so she's like, hey, after we have this horrible battle where our own people betrayed us to let you in,
mm-hmm.
What if I marry you to one of my younger daughters, who's younger than Charles,
mm-hmm.
and she'll be Queen of England, you can be King of France once Charles dies,
yeah,
and then your sons will also be King of France and England.
And that's not gonna work.
And the English are like, awesome. Sounds great.
It's a great gambit.
The Hundred Years' War is over.
But what if Charles has, like, any kids?
No, no, no. Charles the Sixth, once he dies.
Right.
Not young Charles. She's entirely discounted him now.
But, like, he has a better claim.
Yep.
What are you doing?
It's really bad, dude.
What are you doing?
No, when I read this, I was like, what in the F is happening? Like, your son, who's, now you just hate him, I guess.
I mean, if you're gonna do that with a different king, you need to kill your son.
And she doesn't. Obviously.
Mm. Unless you're just trying to stir up trouble. Like, maybe she really just hates France and England that much. She's like, you know, screw you.
It's really rough. And so she's kept under guard, obviously, in Tours. But she's still friends with John the Fearless.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets her released by 1418. Oh, from her banishment. That's how she does it. Everything makes sense now. And afterwards, her new favorite guy, Jean de Vier, is murdered by Bernard of Armagnac, who carves the Burgundy cross into his chest.
Whoa. Hardcore. Dude.
Wow.
Sometimes I wish that I was in the olden days and had a crest so I could carve my crest into people's chests.
Right. So what actually happens, young Charles was like, get rid of mom.
Mm-hmm.
And then this guy gets mom back, and then mom's super pissed off.
I mean, so she brokers the marriage, and then he's like, mom's a bad thing.
No, it's before
it's
that.
Before.
He says, mom's bad news. Dad says, let's get rid of her. She comes back and is really mad.
You should have locked the door.
And then Charles invites John the Fearless to a meeting on a bridge, and they kill him.
Whoa.
16-year-old Charles.
Oh, my gosh.
They kill him.
Nice.
Because he's, like, in his mom's ear.
Yeah.
Right? And he's mad because he brought his mom back.
I'm kind of digging this younger Charles.
He's cool.
Does he have a number?
Seven.
Seven. Okay. Yeah. I'm like, is it spoils to ask if he lives to have a number?
He's number seven.
Okay.
And Queen Isabeau disinherits the crown prince with this, you know, with the move with the marriage, saying, Charles, who calls himself the Dauphin? And I'm like, oh, snap.
You bitch.
Man. So, yeah, she marries Catherine to Henry V and is like, yeah, your heirs will be in charge.
Charles's dead bodies.
Right.
Scoozy?
He's a little mad.
He's Charles VII the little mad.
He's pretty mad.
The kind of irked.
And then, you know, it looks like the Hundred Years' War is over, because that was the problem. That was the main source of conflict, was this claim,
mm-hmm.
and now we've solved it.
We've made a new problem.
We fixed it.
We fixed it.
However, so Henry V is supposed to be king,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
But he dies of dysentery.
Of course. He tried to go to Oregon.
Yep.
You can't.
And he died of poop.
You just can't.
And Charles gets sick during that time, apparently recovers from his fever after eating enormous quantities of oranges and pomegranates.
He had scurvy!
Yeah! But then he gets sick again.
So are we talking the sixth?
Sixth.
Okay.
Our main boy. Charles the Mad. He gets sick, and then he gets better because he ate all that fruit, and then he gets sick again, and then he dies. Like a month after Charles the Fifth.
Too much fruit.
Which means, now, Charles the Seventh of France is, been disinherited, and now the king of England and France is Charles the Sixth, or not Charles the Sixth, Henry the Sixth, who is a baby.
You fools.
Whoops.
You fools.
Oh, doesn't work very well.
Also, I feel like if you're disinherited by your crazy mom, who's not even the real queen anymore, shouldn't count.
She is, though. She became the real queen again.
Shouldn't count.
They undid her banishment.
She's not the real queen if you murder her.
Yikes.
People don't murder when they need to be murdering.
Yeah, they don't murder at all.
Sometimes they murder, really. And I'm like, what are you doing?
Like, why'd you murder that guy?
And then sometimes...
murder your mom.
And sometimes they don't murder. I'm like, what are you doing?
Anyway, so Charles the Sixth dies, and all of the country north of the Loire River becomes England, while southern France, excluding English Aquitaine, is loyal to Charles the Seventh.
Girl, you hacked up.
Charles the Mad dies when he's 61, so he's quite old.
Yeah.
Comparatively, his dad was 43, so he's pretty old. Yeah, now infant King of England is in charge of France, at least the top part.
And he's going to be a baby for the rest of his life.
But guess what this means, Haley?
What does it mean?
Do you know who Charles VII is?
No.
He's the king when perfect angel baby Joan of Arc helps take back over France.
No! Ba-bam! Oh my gosh!
It's all connected!
It's him! He's the cool one who's like... putting on masks, being like, do you know who I am? And she's like, yeah, I know.
Duh.
Oh my gosh.
There's a sword in that church. And he's like, there is a sword in the church.
Hell yeah, there is.
She's connected to God.
Hell yeah, girl. There's a sword
Help
in that
me
church.
Get France back.
Oh
please.
My God.
My mom is crazy.
She's so weird. She's always been like this.
I hate
she's
her.
She's always hated me.
And maybe she actually hated him because he was Charles' son.
Maybe.
And that she didn't have any sons with Louis, doesn't sound like.
Suck it up.
Whoops. But anyway, that's Charles the Mad.
Oh my gosh.
Bum ba dum.
Oh my gosh.
And it's fun because, you know, like I said, I obviously knew that Charles was like, hey, Joan, help me take back over France.
There's so many Charleses, you forget.
100%. And I didn't know that, like, it happened specifically because his mom screwed him out of his own country.
Right.
Which is pretty rough.
It's kind of rough.
It's kind of amazing.
Especially when she's not like I don't know what the word is, but like when, if she was
French.
In the line. Yeah, if she was French.
Yeah.
Then I feel she's like she not. Would have more of a claim.
It would be more fair.
But like she's not from here.
No.
She's not, she doesn't even go here.
But she has her power because her husband kept freaking having an episode every other day. So, like, they came to rely on her. So when it gets to that point, they're like, well, she knows best. And it's like, she does not.
She does not.
She just handed us over to England. Wasn't Germany supposed to protect us from England?
Germany sold you down the river.
Oh, my gosh. Because she's just like, I'm mad, I guess.
I hate you.
But, yeah, so I don't love her. But, you know.
I gotta love her, though. Boy, she made some good plot twists.
But, man, is it a fun time.
Oh, my God.
So there you go. That's Charles the Mad, the Sixth of France, who just, there's so much hope. It's like in that, I told you I watched that one documentary, like, episode of, like, the History Channel, where it was like, and they're so hopeful about their new Emperor Caligula, and I was like, oh, no!
Uh-oh!
And it's like, that's like, they're so hopeful about Charles the Sixth, he's gonna be the best, and I'm like, all of these articles I'm reading, I know that he's crazy.
It calls him the Mad in the title!
Yeah, so then I'm like, uh-oh, when they're all like, he's gonna be great, I'm like, No. It's gonna be rough.
It's not gonna be like the greatest.
But frickin' all it takes is like a 14-year-old girl to save us all.
Hell yeah.
Joan is the true hero.
Joan is the one.
Yeah. She's the greatest.
Oh my gosh.
So, in case you didn't know about those topics previously, we have an episode about Joan of Arc.
Right.
We have an episode about three popes. We have an episode about English catastrophes of ruling.
Right.
All of which I've done. I clearly have a type.
Yes.
But, yeah. And it all fits together. You put in that Charles piece in the middle of the puzzle and it all makes sense. And I was like, magical.
Because everyone who, like, hears the story of Joan's like, and then there's, like, a Charles and he's like, are you legit? And she's like, yeah. And he's like, cool.
Right, but it's not about him.
And you never, like, learn anything else about, literally nothing else about him.
She is the important one in the story for once.
Yes.
But now it all connects.
Now I get it.
It's all at the same time. All of your favorite celebrities are best friends.
Yeah.
All of your historical celebrities.
They all know each
other. Either were each other's dads or punch each other in the face or something.
I know they probably, like, wouldn't have been cool with each other, probably, but it makes me a little sad that Henry V and Joan never met.
Yeah, he died before that. I don't think he would have liked her, obviously. No, they had ruined his thing.
They had differences of trying to kill each other, probably. But
I do like that Henry V is, like, the whole point of, like, the play, you know, and, like, his life, I guess, is that when he's younger, he's, like, a little F-boy.
Yeah.
And then he gets older, and he's, like, a cool dude.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it kind of sounds a little bit like that was Charles VII, too.
Yeah.
That when he's younger, he's, like, fourth in line, so he's, like, blah, you know.
Whatever.
Well, I guess third, because his one brother Diamond's a baby.
But, like, the third in line doesn't have to think about anything.
Right, it's just like, whatever.
And then both of your older siblings die, you're like, oh, no.
Uh-oh. And then you try to make a cool move with your dad to get rid of your mom, and then she just comes back, and it didn't work.
And disinherits you.
Who calls himself
sells one of your sisters to the King of England. Oh my God, Mom.
Why are you like this?
Mom, no!
Anyway, this episode was long. So thank you, Troy, for suggesting this. It was lovely.
It's great.
You
blew Alexis's mind. She was so excited.
I
learned everything. It all fits, Haley. It all fits.
Yeah, I was pointing at my crazy chart like, everything's connected. And it was so exciting. So thank you for sending us that suggestion. If anybody else has suggestions, they can send them to us at hystericalhistorypodcast@gmail.com. We've been getting a lot of good ones like this one.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you. And especially if people have suggestions, we have noticed that the southern half of the world is quite empty.
Right, right.
And that is, you know, we can discuss a different time for various reasons of accessibility and things. And, like, is it actually funny? But if you have any, like, funny stories that are from South America or Africa specifically.
Or, like, Southeast Asia.
Southeast Asia, South Asia, the Middle East, any of those. Like
Indian subcontinent, the Middle East.
We'd love to do those.
Those are all fair game.
So please send us those especially. And we love you.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening. We've been getting so many nice emails and, like, reviews.
That's so nice.
And it's so nice just that, like, you are listening to us babble about nonsense because, like, you know, we started this just because we wanted it to be fun for us.
Yeah.
Because we enjoy talking about these things and learning things. And we're very happy that, like, we have people who really, like, enjoy listening to it and are, like, recommending us to people. It's, like, huge compliments every time.
And that warms my heart.
And we're so appreciative. And we read your emails and, like, laugh to each other and are just like, aw, people like us.
They really like us.
It's so nice.
Oh, I love them. They're so nice.
So thank you.
Sweet babies.
And don't trust your mom.
Don't trust your mom.
If she's a Bavarian queen.
Yeah, because this is going to be after my episode comes out.
Mm-hmm.
I was planning on doing Boudica.
Uh-huh.
Which is going to be like, trust your mom. I mean, don't trust your mom because you're Nero probably. But like your mom's better than you.
Yeah.
Kind of. So whatever.
Really depends.
It's a weird thing.
Really depends on who your mom is.
Really depends.
Okay, bye.
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 Bye. Bye.